The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to The View from the Lane, the world-famous Tottenham Hotspur podcast from The Athletic. I'm Danny Kelly. I've got my more serious voice on because of events at Stamford Bridge last night. I'm joined in the podcast today by both Charlie Eccleshare and James Moore. Charlie, you've been telling us for months that Spurs are good enough to finish in fourth place. Has Arsenal's result last night changed your mind in the slightest?
No.
God, for God's sake.
Thank you. Good night, everybody. Bye.
No. I mean, Arsenal have taken 3 points from their last four games. It's obviously makes it closer, but I still think Spurs will get it looking at games to come. Which, although in saying that, I mean, obviously forecasting based on run-ins has been shown to be a bit of a folly given Arsenal have lost 3 and 1-1. When I think most people thought they'd probably win 3 and lose 1, and that the game they lose would be Chelsea, and that's the only game they've won. Likewise with Spurs, we probably thought of the previous 3. Brighton looked like being the most straightforward, Brighton at home, and that was the game that they lost. But yeah, that being said, I still think Spurs will do it. I mean, there was a lot of it's in their hands-ing yesterday about Arsenal, but it's also in Spurs' hands. I mean, they play each other, and Spurs have the better goal difference, so they do have the advantage.
Spurs are playing Liverpool, though.
Yeah, that's true. But
the goal difference might not be an issue.
But I mean, Arsenal got United and West Ham the next couple of games. And also, I think Newcastle away.
Manchester United.
Yeah, but you know what will happen. Did the double over Spurs?
West Ham aren't
Did the double
West,
over West Ham, West Ham beat
are,
Arsenal?
West Ham are not going to care about this game. They're going to bin it off, and rightly so. But West Ham should bin that game off.
West Ham will play Spurs in the middle of their two semi-finals in Europe, won't they?
We'll play Arsenal, yeah.
Coffee's gone down the wrong way.
Yeah, Arsenal. Look, James.
That's calm, James.
Charlie, let me stop you right there and we'll come back to it. I'm getting opening statements here now, like it's a court of law. James, earlier on, people on Twitter were saying, good, there's a meltdown going on among Spurs fans. I hope we're going to hear something more rational on The View from the Lane.
I mean, where have you been all season? What were you expecting?
Wrong podcast.
What was the name of that guy? The Iraqi defence minister in like 2002, 2004?
Comical Ali.
That's Charlie. It's absolutely fine. There's no imminent collapse here.
Nothing to see here.
It's all going to be fine. I mean, it's a nightmare. It's all going wrong.
It was a calamity, wasn't it, last night?
I've got to say, Chelsea... I can't believe how they played yesterday. The third Arsenal goal was one of the most ludicrous goals I've ever seen in a Premier League. If Charlie's team had conceded that goal on a Sunday morning, you play Sunday morning, don't you? Not Sunday.
Sunday, yeah.
Sorry, RIP Charlie's former team, sorry. You'd be livid if you conceded that goal, right? I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, it's comedy capers stuff. I mean, the weird thing is, I was saying this before to Tom, and a lot of people have made this point, it is really odd how City to Spurs, Chelsea to Arsenal have become almost what City are to Spurs. It's this weird... So City, I think Spurs have beaten City 4 out of the last 5 times. And in the last 5 meetings between Arsenal and Chelsea, Arsenal have won 3 and drawn 1.
I've been saying, wait a second. I've been saying that all season. Every time you've said Arsenal have got a game in hand, but it's against Chelsea, so it doesn't count. I've said to you, Arsenal always beat Chelsea. So I was right. As I said, now it's my turn to say I've been right the whole time.
That Arsenal would beat Chelsea.
In your face.
Can I join in the I was right the whole time brigade? Insofar as after the game... Thomas Tuchel said that he blamed himself for the Chelsea selection. I have to say that was 2 hours too late because I blamed him before the game started. I was going to watch the match. When I saw Chelsea's lineup, I thought, I'm not going to watch this now because I have an inkling what's going to happen. I mean, Christensen and Zaha are their third and fourth choice centre-backs. Azpilicueta, more about him later, can play centre-back, but he's playing right wing-back. Whereas Reece James, the best right wing back in the country, with all due respect to Trent Alexander-Arnold, is playing at centre back. This is straight out of the UEFA coaching manual, isn't it? The fans think they know what's best because they've watched millions of games of football. You must do something different to justify earning £250,000 a week. The idiot. Next up. Let me come back. When was the last time, you're the stats man here, Charlie. When was the last time that Ruben Loftus-Cheek played two successive good games of association football? No one can remember because it's never happened. And he's in the team.
I thought he looked all right, actually, Loftus-Cheek.
The reintroduction of the completely out of form, not wanting to be there, Romelu Lukaku, smacked to me of Football Manager, where you've got a game that doesn't matter against a team you think you're going to beat, and you reintroduce a fringe player. And of course, Arsenal could see this coming, the complacency of Chelsea. He reverts to a back three, partially, of course, to be rational, to use that word, about it, because they've been having such defensive calamities. But also they could see that we're going to probably play Lukaku in what for them was a semi-meaningless game. It was a nonsense selection by Chelsea. And if it had been a meaningful game for them, it's exactly the sort of selection that gets managers to sack when they do concede four goals at home immediately afterwards. But of course, you know, he has got them to six cup finals in his time he's been there. And they're champions of Europe until a couple of weeks ago. I get it. He can do what the hell he likes. But I'm sure Chelsea fans knew it too. It was a horrible selection by Tuchel.
I mean, I don't make you wrong on any part of that other than maybe the Loftus-Cheek thing I thought did okay. But someone tweeted after the game last night, all of Chelsea's home league games, like the last 12 home league games, and they had won, I think, three. Two of those they scored after the 85th minute and scraped it, which I think were against Leeds and Newcastle. And the other one they won comfortably. Would anyone care to venture who they beat comfortably at home?
Spurs, was it?
Spurs, we won.
Correct.
It is mad, that matchup, like that Chelsea-Spurs matchup, what seems to work so bad for Spurs, and yet the City one seems to work so well for them. I mean, obviously with City, they do leave big gaps in behind, but
yeah.
The way Chelsea played, I mean, it was bizarre. I mean, Conte kept going on about how Brighton closed the space really well on Saturday, and I think that's something Chelsea do also, so maybe that's the
there's just like
the
a complete
key.
Lack of intensity, wasn't there? And I do think, like, I don't think this is too strong a statement. I do think sometimes, like, you know, you're Chelsea, they're probably going to finish third. I know they're only, what, like, kind of 5 points ahead of Spurs with a game in hand or whatever, but they're going to finish third, I'm sure. They've got the cup final ahead of them. A season's sort of petering out, certainly in the league, and I just think, like, you're going to struggle for that extra, like, or for that last sort of 5, 10, 15% of sort of motivation and drive. And then you kind of put a couple of out-of-form players in the team as well. You're always going to play badly.
And fit physically as well. I just thought they looked tired.
They've played like a stupid number of games this season.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, to be fair, they were coming off a week where they went to Real Madrid. How much that must have taken out of them. Then the semi-final at Wembley on Sunday. So they had a shorter turnaround. So I do think as much as it's mental, I think physically as well, they just looked a bit knackered in the second half. Which might be why Danny Tuchel would say, I do know better than the fans because I know the conditioning of these players inside out, you don't.
That is literally the only excuse. They dig that ditch and they stand in it and they force people to say, Thomas, I've got a living to make. I cannot be down there in Cobham or wherever the hell that is and be watching them as well. I know what I know. I see what I see. And I'm not saying you're stupid, but don't make out that I'm stupid.
He's going to find TalkSport. That would be great.
and as soon as he gets the sack, he'll be my co-host on a Monday night on the press box, and I'll be telling him exactly the same thing as you to tell Gordon Strachan the same thing.
Can you imagine?
Gordon Strachan when you're a
pickup? Wait. No, he didn't. No. So that Chelsea selection, I mean, you have to say Arsenal took full advantage of it. I thought Arsenal's selection, I don't understand why he hasn't been. Look, I know Nketiah hasn't scored for a year, but if he isn't a more threatening player than Alexander Lacazette, who puts in a shift, I'm not having to go at Alexander Lacazette here, then I don't know, again, the evidence of my own eyes. And I was saying to herself here when she's been bemoaning the lack of goals at Arsenal, they've got a proper striker at the club, but they won't play him for whatever reasons. And you have to trust them. And in that case, it's not you don't see him in training, it is you have to trust the process.
I would have been curious to know on that first goal how close towards goal Lacazette could have reached before being caught. So when Christensen plays the ball back and Nketiah obviously takes it and scores, I think Lacazette would have got to about 30 yards from goal before he was caught up. I genuinely think he's that slow before he sort of had to
He'd have turned back and looked for a pass on him. But that's okay. Every player has their qualities.
Exactly. He's there to facilitate. But there is a point at which you think not being able to score a goal is maybe an issue for a team. And I did say that a couple of weeks ago.
I know. We must get on to Manchester United.
So I was right, not James.
Yeah, of course.
In this ongoing battle
of rectitude, yes. Yeah. Just because we're not supposed to be analysing the Oppo too much, although, of course, in the run-in to these very close races at the end of the season, you have to look at what other teams are doing. That is the nature of the thing. What was Cesar Azpilicueta? Been in this country 10 years, knows the drill. What was he doing at the end of the game? Anybody got any clue?
Well, can we all agree, just first of all, whatever we think about football, that Azpilicueta is a bit of a... I don't want to use a swear word. No. It means we have to bleep it out. But that penalty... There's this weird unwritten rule in football that to get a penalty, if you as a defender commit five or six sort of mini fouls on someone, you know the way how you would outside of the box. And if you do that, what happens is the guy who's being fouled sort of stops as if say like, and puts his hands out as if say, come on, that's a foul. And a free kick is given. But there's a rule that if it's in the penalty area, you have to go down. There has to be a moment. There has to be a foul moment that merits the penalty. So Azpilicueta thinks, well, I'll get away with this if I do what I always... And because he's a big one for doing this sort of thing. A lot of gamesmanship with this guy. And I do hope referees wise up to the fact that players like him do this sort of thing, thinking they can get away with it. And then his absolute incredulity when he finally got caught. And then, yeah, he's rowing with a fan at the end. I think he's a big one for posturing and, you know, getting in people's faces and things. And so I think he was put out by someone questioning his motivation, which, to be fair, he clearly is really motivated. But... yeah, I just thought that whole situation at the end was quite funny, him arguing with a fan.
It's rarely a good look. Unless you're Eric Dyer and you actually get into the crowd, it's rarely a good look arguing with home fans. Yeah, if you're going to do it, get banned for doing it, you know. Don't stand there 20 yards away waving your hands about. One last thing on this, and I will move on to Manchester United then. I feel like Grandpa Simpson shouting at clouds now. I'm obsessed with that defeat at home to Brighton because as well as, I know it's only 3 points. I get that it's 3 points, but results have... a resonance way beyond the mere 3 points. And that is this. If Spurs had won that game, they would have still put some distance between themselves and Arsenal, but they would have also put pressure on Chelsea, and Chelsea would not have been allowed to pick that useless second team that they did. So you have to be careful sometimes about the value of victories, particularly this late in the season. I know it's exactly the same 3 points you get you win or lose in September. But they do have more meaning now.
It's also the pressure it puts on that game at Brentford on Saturday. And more than that, the pressure it's going to put on the North London derby in 3 weeks' time or whenever it is. It's just going to completely ratchet that up through the roof. So, yeah, it's more than just losing a one-off game that has ultimately still left them in fourth for the time being. I think it could be like there's potential for that to be quite a big like momentum shift, particularly now Arsenal have won a big game.
Oh, it has been. There is a shift in psychological momentum. You only hear the nervousness in our voices. Can we at least agree on something and not have too much of I told you so and I was right? Are Manchester United now out of the race, Charlie?
I mean, I thought they were for until a week or so ago. And I absolutely don't think they will do it because I don't think they're good enough. I don't think they're well organised enough. But the way the season's going, the rhythm of the season, it wouldn't be a huge shock if it all changed. If they, you know, in the way that they've beaten Arsenal already, beaten Spurs twice, beaten West Ham twice, if suddenly out of nowhere they produce a performance, nick a win on Saturday, and all of a sudden you're looking at the league table and saying, how on earth are United actually they'd be level on points with Spurs? Spurs would have two games in hand. But I don't think that the way, like, given how many shocks there have been, even in just the last couple of weeks, and given the nature of the top four race, and maybe we'll get onto that, all these teams are going to be inconsistent. I don't think we can definitively say they're out of it, even though I would still be very surprised if they got it.
I mean, they definitely couldn't lose that game on Saturday, could they? Because if they lost to Arsenal, then they're 6 points behind Arsenal. Arsenal have a game in hand, and Man United have four games left. So yes. that just feels like that's going to be too big, particularly when Spurs and Arsenal are playing each other, so there's quite a high percentage chance that one over two of them is going to get those 3 points.
And they've got to play Chelsea at home, United the next game. And you'd think Chelsea wouldn't be playing as
I don't know who Chelsea have got in between then and now, the weekend.
They've got West Ham, I think. So
interesting.
It's not till next Thursday, Chelsea, United Chelsea game. So less.
If Chelsea drop points at the weekend, and then they go to Old Trafford. And suddenly, you know, if United have beaten Arsenal and are sort of confident again, then, you know, if Chelsea lost that game, add Chelsea back in that conversation again.
This race has been so nuts that I can see last day of the season, last minute of the season, Paul Pogba crosses the ball to the far post in the 97th minute of United's last game. Let me just check for you where and when that is. Away at Palace for Phil Jones to rise at the far corner post and score with a head that actually hits him in the face and causes him to make that special face that he makes, and United qualifying for the fourth place. Let's hope it doesn't get to that.
Well, or Cristiano Ronaldo. I mean, that is the thing. He's kind of the team in microcosm, isn't he? Because we know he's not what he was, but he is still capable of these moments that leave you raging because you're like, how is this guy still doing it? How is this team still doing it? But we know they can. I mean, we saw that a few weeks ago at Old Trafford in the Spurs game.
I mean, look, at their last two wins, he scored a hat-trick, right? And they haven't won any other games in the last like six or seven in the league or whatever. It's something stupid.
Let's move on, if we may. Having not, I hope, demonstrate any kind of rationality about this, I was beside myself. I'd say, once I saw the teams, I didn't watch it. So I'm flicking my phone on every now and then to see how it's going. Every time I flicked it on, Chelsea had just equalised. So in the second half, I presumed they would pull away. Wrong. In better news, it's fair to say, Oliver Skipp has signed a new contract, the details of which I think you both have and broke, Charlie.
Yeah. I mean, it's a big, big deal for him, obviously. Massive pay rising. He's in more than doubles what he was on previously and secures his future at the club till 2027. I mean, it's mad. It was pointed out to me kind of while getting stuff together for this that he will have been at the club 20 years. Before this contract expires.
Wow.
I mean, that is mad. Very few players can say that.
Man and embryo.
Yeah, genuinely. I mean, he joined when he was five. It's kind of crazy. You know, and it's great news for the academy. It's great for them to, you know, be able to point to him and say, look, there is that pathway. And I remember interviewing Skip in 2019 and him talking about how Winks and Kane had shown that pathway to him and how he was, you know, using that. And obviously, since then, he's really gone from strength to strength. He shows as well, you know, the value of a good loan. He had that great year at Norwich. Was really, really important for him. I think a lot of players, certainly in the Pochettino era, you look at someone like Kyle Walker-Peters. I think, you know, there's a real sense there that he would have benefited from one. But yeah, so big news, big deal for him. The shame of it, obviously, is this ongoing injury. Still no return date. And, you know, it may be that given the only real solution to it is rest, that the decision is made that just give him a rest till next season, basically. Yeah. Let him have a proper preseason. Let him really focus on getting ready for next year, which is a shame because, you know, he was in such good form. And, you know, I think he would have been pushing for an England place in those March friendlies, given the way he was playing. But yeah, it's really good. It's really good news. And also for Spurs, I mean, they remain incredibly good at signing their players to contracts. I mean, they don't have anyone. The only person whose contract is such expires this summer is Gallini, who will go, you know, who's only on a loan, who I don't think, you know, I don't think there'll be too, although, you know, we're legally obliged to say very popular in the dressing room, has been a big character, was at Dele Alli's birthday party, in fact. Something a bit sad about
He must
about
be
that,
good,
yeah.
Given he could only have known him for a few months.
Dele helped make the equaliser for Everton last night.
He
His
did.
His first contribution for them.
Is that enough to prompt an Is Dele back piece? Probably. The bar's
not,
pretty
not,
low.
Not enough to prompt 40 million quid, no.
Yeah, still waiting for
yeah.
that. But yeah, so hopefully Skip will be back soon. And, you know, he is a really exciting player. Still talked about as a future captain at the club. Conte loves him, unsurprisingly. I mean, he's such a Conte player. Great attitude. Super fit. One of the fittest at the club. Especially since Dele left, actually. Dele was always very high in those categories as well.
Listen, let me ask you a question. I'll ask it to James. And there's no side to this I want to ask. In a system that we're currently playing, let's assume Conte stays and we continue to play this. You only have two in midfield, officially. You know, you've got four, but the two of them are wing-backs. It strikes me they have to be... People talk about the wing-backs being the most vital players in this Conte system. I don't buy that. I think the two central midfielders are the most important because of their lack of numbers. We love Ollie Skip because he is one of our own and he has improved and he's gone away. He's ultra-professional. Is he going to be good enough for one of those two pivotal players in the middle of the system Spurs are currently playing? If they were playing 3-5-2, I'd have no question he's absolutely perfect for that. But we don't play that.
Yeah, it's difficult to know, isn't it? Because we haven't really seen him play. I think they weren't playing this system in quite the same way when he was fit.
No.
And he's not played with Bentancur.
Yeah, exactly, not played sure. with Bentancur. So it's hard to say. I mean, I think when he got injured, and obviously, you know, as you were saying, it seemed like that was going to be
terminal for Spurs, and that was season over effectively because they weren't going to be able to replace him, and their record without him was so bad. I think if you would ask then, you would say definitely yes. So the only thing that's really changed since then is that Højbjerg has played much better, or perhaps a lot better than I think a lot of people expected in the last sort of 2 or 3 months. So really, that shouldn't really move a dial in terms of our expectations for Skip, who, you know, had a very good first half of the season and was clearly integral to the way Spurs were playing both under Nuno and Conte. So I don't... His skill set, I think, is pretty broad.
Yeah.
I mean, he's clearly not like a spectacular player in any sense, no. But he is very good at being in the right areas of the pitch and keeping things ticking over in a sort of less sexy, Modric-y sort of way, I guess. And very good at like picking the ball up and winning the ball back. So,
yeah.
Surely if you have two players in that system playing central midfield, you need them to have that broad skill set. And we probably have to have the expectation that with coaching from Conte and experience, he is going to improve in most of those areas. So I don't think it's unreasonable to expect him to grow into that.
Such a lot is demanded of the two in that system that I think you have to be really, you know, quite a special player to make it work at the upper echelons.
But there is a sense, I mean, at the club, there is a lot of excitement of that Skip Bentancur partnership. Partly, you know, obviously we've never seen it, so it's there's an element of the unknown about it. But yeah, I mean, there was a period that, and I'm told, you know, you always have to be a little skeptical of the amount of causality and correlation within this, but the win-loss ratios were so steeply different when Skip was playing and when he wasn't. And he, we talked about this the other day, didn't we? What I was saying about Darren Fletcher missing the Champions League final in 2009 and how that was sort of his best game for the club. You often realise a player's importance when they're not there. He missed that game. Skip, I think we really did get a sense of how important he was when he dropped out of the team. To be fair, at that point, Bentancur wasn't fully settled and Conte was still kind of alternating between Winks and Højbjerg. But I think James makes a really good point there about the broadness of his... of his skill set, because you do need to do a lot. You almost need to, in a three, you can be protected a little bit and a bit more specialised, and you might not have to do everything because you've got two people with you. When you're in that two, you do need to be an all-rounder, and Skip is an all-rounder. Mm-hmm. I mean, some people think of him as a kind of defensive midfielder. I mean, he played as an eight throughout the academy. He can do that. He actually, I think it was the Brentford game, the reverse fixture of what we have coming up, 2-0 win in December, and he played more as an eight, was quite progressive and played really, really well. He can do that. He's got a good passing range and he can win the ball back. So I think there's no reason to think he can't be a starter in a top four Premier League team, especially with Conte. He's learning all the time, very coachable. And a player coming through the academy and establishing them in the first team is one of the best things about being a football fan. Absolutely. So I do think it is... I think it is a really positive story.
Okay, a player coming through the academy, establishment in the first team is one of the best things about football, but we're only allowed 25 players in the squads for reasons that I don't understand. So a new contract for one player might well mean the closing of the door for another. Does this affect Harry Winks's position at the club?
Well, I mean, I think Skip is viewed more as a future starter than Harry Winks is. I think, you see that in how... in Conte's team selections. I mean, Harry Winks is among the players whose contract expires in the summer of 2024. So generally there's this thought, isn't there, with players with 2 years left, you kind of have to make the decision on them. Are you going to try and offer them a new contract and pin them down? Or are at a point where they hold the power? So, I mean, again, we've been saying this for a while, haven't we? I mean, I remember writing a piece on this in the season before last. You know, it was a kind of, should he stay or should he go moment when he wasn't playing and the Euros were coming up. So I think, but it will be an interesting summer for him. And I think he and the club do have a big decision to make, you know, as to what this means. Because also we forget that Saar will come back, you know, so they will have an additional central midfielder, whatever happens, assuming they don't loan him out again. You know, so that would be Saar coming back, Saar, Højbjerg, Skip, Bentancur is four already, Winks makes five. And if they continue to play with only two, you'd think that's a bit bloated, and Conte will want to bring in another central midfielder. So
exactly. I think the days of Harry Winks look like they're ended, because I don't believe that he will go for a whole summer, given Conte loves a shopping list, without agitating for at least one central midfielder. But it's easy to pick on players who are not doing well, we should say congratulations to Oliver Skipp, because there would have been a time 2 years ago when you think, oh, this guy is, you know, people talk about him. Who knows if he's going to make a Premier League footballer? And clearly the new contract,
I mean, the chances of doing what he's done are minuscule. Absolutely minuscule. I mean, the odds are stacked against you to an absolutely incredible degree. So it is. And the great thing about him is he's done it through hard work, really. I mean, you know, there will have been plenty of players more talented, as talented as him when he was coming through. I mean, a lot of people think as well he did benefit from, partly maybe because of the position he plays. He wasn't hyped up in the way that, say, Marcus Edwards was or Troy Parrott was. Mm-hmm. He was able to get his head down a bit more. And he just did that and has been uber professional.
Of course, Ndombele and Lo Celso are probably back as well. To add to Spurs...
How quickly we move on.
Bulging kit basket of central midfielders. Let's take a break.
Re-signed Dele as well, just for the fun of it.
Well, he'd probably be a free, wouldn't he? So let's have a quick break. When we come back, I want to look forward to the game against Brentford, if that is now the correct expression again. And we'll also talk about your article today, Charlie, which marks 5 years since Hugo Ehiog died. You'll listen to The View from the Lane. Yeah, welcome back, everybody, to The View from the Lane. I'm Danny Kelly. The other voices you're hearing today are those of James Moore and Charlie Eccleshare. Charlie, Hugo Ehiog never played for Spurs, but as your article points out, it's 5 years to the day since he died, and yet he is a revered figure at the club.
Yeah, he really is. I mean, the impact he's left, you really feel it when you talk to people who played under him and who worked with him. And they really do want to keep his memory alive at the academy. And I talk about this in the piece every year, and they'll do it today at around lunchtime at midday. They'll all get together, staff, former players, current academy players, to kind of share their memories of him, talk about him. There's a big picture of him in the academy building. And for the piece, well, I was lucky enough to speak to Gareth Southgate as well, who was his great friend and obviously played with him. They have this centre-back partnership at Villa and Middlesbrough. And, you know, in the piece, you'll see the quotes are very, very strong from him. It clearly had a huge impact on him, because I think Hugo was a very special person, and something he talks about and all the coaches talk about, and indeed the players, is the rapport he was able to build up with these young guys. He had a real hinterland, you know, he was into music. He could just really connect with young people.
He had a record company. He ran the record company.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. The 1975 are famously part of it. And it's just really interesting talking to youth coaches, people like Dean Rastrick, who runs the academy, and saying, you know, you can't teach these things. You know, a lot of coaching you can teach, but that rapport, that ability to connect with young people, that's a lot harder to teach. And that's why he's so revered, why he lives on, and why players like Luke Amos and Kyle Walker-Peters still have his images on their Twitter page. You know, he really, you know, people come along in our lives and they are really, really special. And I think he was one of those people. And that's why 5 years on, that loss is still felt really, really acutely by a lot of people at Spurs, and also obviously throughout football and far beyond that.
Listen, thank you. The piece is well worth reading, and it's in The Athletic, as I'll tell you later. Right, we've got to win football matches, James. Brentford, are we going to win that game? How are we going to win that game? You are the manager.
Oh, great, okay. I mean, I do think, despite our emotional start to this podcast, I think that probably the answer to that is to not panic. And that will probably be Conte's approach, won't it? Stick to what they were doing before and don't do anything drastic. I mean, I don't really see there's any major need to change the team. I mean, I don't really see what they can change, really.
How could you?
It's not like you've got like a creative midfield player that you can chuck in to change the system and, you know, replace Kulusevski, who didn't have a particularly good game last weekend. I mean, you can only really go with what they've got and hope for the best. I think that game did underline, the Brighton game did underline, I don't know, you talked about this earlier in the week, the fact that they haven't got that. Like a real kind of playmaker, a Christian Eriksen type, in fact.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe that will be hammered home even more painfully on Saturday. But yeah, I don't really see that they can afford to do anything crazy with the team. And I just don't really think they really have the options to do that. So it seems like a fairly straightforward answer, really.
This strikes me that there is one option, and he's not going to do this, but we've been asked here to Blue Sky, And that is, he could break the habit of a lifetime. Because the problem, one of the problems against Brighton was that in the middle of midfield, we just had no way of getting the ball forward accurately. And I'm not suggesting for 1 minute that Harry Winks is going to do that specifically. But you could take the left-sided defender out of the team, put Davis at left back and play 4-3-3. You reinforce a midfield that was sliced through by Brighton. You stop the problem that neither Reguilón nor Emerson Royal really has done a lot in the attacking half, despite getting some really good positions over the last little while. I know Reguilón could have had a couple of goals in various games. I do get that. And do you really need three centre-backs to deal with Ivan Toney, who will presumably play on his own up front for Brentford? It's just a thought. When we say you can't do anything, you know, you've got a squad of players. You can always do something if you wanted to. Now, I'm not advocating even that he does that, but I was thinking, is there anything semi-radical that he could do to stop a repeat of the game against Brighton and the first half against Aston Villa, which were very close blood relatives?
And the first half against Newcastle wasn't great either. Mm-hmm. The other option, the only straightforward personnel choice, I guess you'd say, is Sessegnon could come in for Reguilón. Mm-hmm. He might do that. If you wanted to tweak the system, but not quite as radically as what you're suggesting, Danny, what he could do is go to a 3-5-2 and replace Royale with Winks. So Kulusevski moves to right wing back. Winks comes into a central midfield three with Højbjerg and Bentancur. Kulusevski has played there a little bit for Spurs in extremis, and Conte said he could do that role. Again, I can't see it, but that is a possibility if he wants to stiffen the midfield without and change the system without dropping any of the front three, which obviously he's not going to do. And that would be a way of offsetting the fact that without Doherty, they don't have a threat from the right with Royale, despite the fact, you know, he's giving everything. I don't think you can question his work rate, but he's a reasonably defensive fullback. He's not an attacking winger.
I mean, I wonder whether he's been actually told not to cross the ball. There's several positions against Brighton where he was in a position where he could have lumped it in, but that's an old-fashioned phrase for crossing the ball. But he cut back inside and looked for other players, and maybe that was because the team had suddenly developed this kind of nervous tick. There was just no confidence. Or he'd been told, not you, don't cross the ball in. I don't know. And James, I suppose hearing myself and Charlie outlining our alternative plans, you must be very glad that it is Antonio Conte who actually manages the team.
Yeah, I mean, well, like I say, I think that does sort of underline the fact that there isn't the depth or the flexibility in the squad to change it, which maybe just as well, because I don't think he's going to anyway. I don't really think he's minded to change his system, is he?
No, although he has played a 3-5-2 once or twice. In fact, in one of Skip's last games, that one against Leicester, he played all three of Skip, Winks and Højbjerg, and it worked pretty well. But yeah, I mean, if he can avoid it, he'll absolutely stick with the 3-4-3.
It is worth reiterating that he won the Scudetto last year when he changed the team quite late in the season, two-thirds of the way through the season, when he realised that Inter were running out of certain kinds of ideas, and he played Eriksen, of all people. Mm. Eriksen suddenly appeared in behind a front two of Martinez and Lukaku. So he can change it if he wants to. He chose to do it there, and it had great, great results.
We also shouldn't forget that, you know, it wasn't only one game. Before the Brighton game, we were saying, me especially, I hold my hands up, and I still think this is the case, that they had really clicked as an attacking unit. You know, they were scoring. The evidence was there for all to see us. It wasn't like a hunch. They were scoring a bucket load of goals. So I don't think off the back of one off day, which, you know, he will hope it was, you then start saying we should change the system, which I know you're not suggesting, Dan.
No,
it's just about discussing the options.
Yeah,
but I do think he should keep it. I wanted to ask you guys, I mean, something I'm looking at ahead of the game, this kind of idea that Spurs could re-sign Eriksen, and, you know, it is a possibility that it could happen. Well, and we touched on it last week, I think, or earlier this week, but are you all for that? Are you sort of thinking maybe not the smartest? I mean, I'm sceptical personally.
They've won every game he started.
Yeah.
And they're Brentford in the Premier League. I mean, it's not like... I mean, it's pretty incredible, really. I think it's like six games he started and they've won them all. Or something
five,
like that.
Maybe?
Five, maybe. I mean, it's good, that. That's decent. It's a decent,
that's a good,
it's a decent
I was
record.
Saying that, you know, people are sceptical of those win-loss ratios, but yeah, that's fairly striking.
Yeah, I mean, that feels it feels almost too obvious, doesn't it? You know, he's played for Conte before. He got up to speed in that system. Obviously, he's familiar with Spurs.
they need a player who can play in that role. And I mean, I think actually maybe it'd be a situation where they weren't necessarily reliant on him in every single game as well. I don't know whether that would be good or bad from his perspective. But I mean, it feels so obvious to me.
It does. My only thing is whether it's like, if it's Spurs have made a lot of short-term decisions over the last few years and it's not always worked out that well. And I just wonder if that, I mean, their whole, what we're told by Paratici and others is that, you know, their transfer build dealings are about building for the future, you know, signing players that are kind of ready for now, but also have a big future ahead of them. Bentancur, Kulusevski being, you know, the sort of the paradigm.
If you can go out and get Eriksen for nothing in the summer, and you can be, I mean, you can never be certain, but you can be fairly sure that he's going to be able to do that job for Spurs for at least two seasons, say. That gives you the time and the financial flexibility to work out who the next one is and bring them in and let them have a bit of time to...
Let me put it more bluntly to you both. If you had a choice between bringing in Eriksen for nothing in the summer or paying 60 million for James Maddison, which one would you do, Charlie?
I'd bring Eriksen in for nothing, but I don't think, like, nothing is a little bit misleading because obviously these players come with fairly big wages. You know, you have to give them reasonable contracts for them to come.
Yes, all players do. Yes, I agree.
Yeah,
I agree.
And also, you know, we talked, you know, homegrown quotes, all of this thing, they take up a place in the squad. It's not, Spurs aren't a Chelsea who can just go out and sign a load of players and if half of them don't work, well, yeah, the former Chelsea, then it doesn't really matter. I mean, their level of wastage is staggering. I mean, you're talking about the players who played yesterday and were saying aren't good enough. You know, Lukaku cost almost 100 million and it's like, nah, yeah, but didn't work out, whatever, just move him on. Timo Werner, who I know is sort of doing okay by pretty low standards, cost a fortune as well. They can just bring, I mean, they run Ziyech, Havertz, whatever. You know, Spurs can't do that. So it's not quite as simple as just saying, you know, he's not coming and playing for free.
Certainly I would prefer, and I love both of these players, to the whatever is the constituent parts of my DNA, and I don't have enough Higgs boson points to know what that is, I would prefer him to Gareth Bale, which also keeps coming up, doesn't it?
I mean, I don't think Bale will happen for a third time, but I mean, is there anything to be learned from the Bale return? Though I guess that worked out.
I thought Bale did really well.
That worked out, okay.
He got 17 goals.
Yeah, his numbers were great.
Games. I mean,
he scored more than a goal a game in the Premier League, but per 90 last season.
It's a different player and it's a different manager. And those two things align more neatly. I'm being very diplomatic here.
yes, as you can probably tell. A lot more neatly.
I don't imagine a lot of those players. Does Eriksen even play golf?
Imagine one season of a motivated Gareth Bale near a lot of very good golf courses in North London, and with the World Cup coming up to get fit for. Imagine him playing as left or right wing back in Conte's system. Just a thought. Lots of 6'5s. Great. That's what Spurs are for.
That's exactly what they're for.
Yeah, get Berbatov.
Get back Mark Falco. Yeah, absolutely. It's been, as I have to say, considering the mood I was in after last night's result in West London, I thought I wouldn't necessarily enjoy this, but it's been an absolute joy. So thank you to James, who I'm sure is often called an absolute joy.
That, yes, often. Very, very much so.
Yeah. And you, Charlie, it's a standard description of you, isn't it? So thank you very much indeed. Thank you all for listening. And remember, as I always tell you at this stage, and I mean it, that if you're not already a subscriber to The Athletic, then you can sign up right now to read all of our articles on Spurs. You'll also have access to everything else on the site, which, believe me, is a lot of gear. Just go to theathletic.com/SpursPod. Sign up right now for just £1 a month for the first 6 months. That's theathletic.com/SpursPod. We'll be back on Monday, where no doubt our mental temperature will have been affected again by such stupid things as the results of football matches. Thanks for listening.
The Athletic.